on this 11th day of February 2005, where we will be conducting a public hearing on House Bills 2103, 2105, 2177, 2201, 2053. So welcome, everybody, to the committee meeting today, and Representative Tomei.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce you to a gentleman who is visiting here from France, Mr. Laurent Fist from Molsheim. He was introduced on the House floor this morning, and we're so happy to have him, and his interpreter, Margot Fox. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Welcome.
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 You speak French, Representative Tomei?
No, I don't.
Well, perhaps we can't welcome you in French then, I guess. I sure don't.
Bienvenue.
There you go. Bienvenue. Thank you, Representative Boone.
Helping out a little bit.
In a pinch. All right. House Bill 2103. Let's see. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2103. Which changes the name of the Health Licensing Office, the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. And we have Susan Wilson with the Health Licensing Office and Jim Marquis. We'd ask them to come forward at this time, please. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Marquis, I represent the Oregon Board of Cosmetology, and to my left is Sue Wilson, Administrator of the Health Licensing Office. House Bill 2103 was introduced by the request of the Health Licensing Office and makes some needed changes to conform statutes with changes that were made by the legislature last session. And I'm going to, with that, I'm just going to turn this over to Sue and let her explain why these changes are needed. It's a fairly straightforward bill, I believe, and nobody is, and to my knowledge, nobody's opposed to the bill.
Was there some kind of amendment to this bill? You're going to go into that?
Okay. Yes. Chair Dalton, would you like me to do it now, or would you like me to explain it?
No, you can do it when it's appropriate.
Chair Dalton, members of the committee, I have handed out some testimony for you in its written form. I've also provided a list of boards and councils within the office. We are an office that was established by the 1999 legislature as a licensing and regulatory operation that provides administrative and management services under one model agency. It has its own mission and goals as it relates to licensing and regulation. We're unique in that sense in that the agency has its own set of statutes under which the boards and councils of varying degrees of authority operate. What we've done over the last two sessions is make sure that our conforming language within the health licensing office conform with the boards that we link to and provide licensing, examination, and monitoring and enforcement and compliance services. So that's what this bill is attempting to do. In addition, it is changing the name from the Health Licensing Office to an agency, which implies what we are, which is a licensing department that provides those services that I've just gone through. Those conforming links to our law are, we're getting the assistance from legislative counsel, and in doing that, they're picking up items that were overlooked during the last session, as Mr. Marquis has mentioned. I'm going to be very brief if you have questions. Regulatory streamlining piece that is a piece that is the outcome of the governor's executive order to try to look at your statutes, audit your statutes, and find where you have unnecessary, inefficient statutes. What we did is create one license where there are three to four disciplines that currently exist within the Health Licensing Office, and they're paying three separate fees. They can pay as much as $600 for three or four business licenses. We're creating one business license because our staff takes care of inspecting for those areas and those disciplines. This will streamline we're estimating about 300 businesses in the state of Oregon, allow them to purchase one license rather than the four licenses. It will be a cost reduction for them. Now, to the amendment that is proposed. What we didn't anticipate is there are floors and ceilings within the statutes that were currently governing those small business licenses, and we have to adjust those statutes. That was raised by Legislative Council and our review. Once we did this great thing of creating this one facility license, we found that, again, that it linked to other statutes, and we need to correct those statutes. That's what the amendment will do, is correct the statutes, ceilings and floors as it relates to fees. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any discussion?
Excuse me. Sue, on a separate matter, you're familiar with Representative Crummell's amendment on the athletic trainers. Would that be appropriate for this bill, do you know?
Chair Dalto, I believe Representative Crummell has been in contact with Legislative Counsel Charlie Cheek, and they have amended to another bill. I don't have that bill in front of me. It is I can get that to you.
Yeah, no, the only reason I ask is because that other bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and this I don't think.
Yes.
Oh, this one has a referral too. All right, well, never mind. Moot issue then. Okay.
Representative Dalto, with it,
yes.
We would have, if you chose to do that, we would certainly have no
objection. We have no objection to doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, seeing no further discussion, thank you.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2103 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2105.
Let's start with these two again.
Okay. Sandy, you want to introduce this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2105. Let's have Sue explain it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Go ahead.
Excuse me, Representative Dalto. Representative Boone, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying I think we don't have a quorum, so.
Oh.
We're not moving anything.
Yeah.
Today,
right.
So
yeah.
Not necessary.
So.
Oh, go ahead. Introduce the bill, Sue.
Okay.
We do.
We do.
Yeah, we do have a quorum.
We have.
No. Yeah, I think Representative Tomei returned.
I was recording.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Dalto, members of the committee, again, Susan Wilson, Director for the Health Licensing Office. One of the boards that is within the office, which is in the Health Licensing Office, is the Cosmetology Board. And once again, in that audit of reviewing our statutes to make sure that we are in compliance and regulating in a manner that's not overbearing and regulating as it relates to training and education, we found that there were a few revisions that needed to take place within the cosmetology definitions. One of those changes was changing the term facial technology to a more recognizable international national term, which is aesthetics for skin care, and conforming those national standards within that that definition. A very large component of that is removing a barrier that was in the law and established in the law in 1987, and that was eliminating the seventh vertebra so that individuals that are licensed in skin care can do skin care on the chest, on the back of the neck. Typically, skin care involves extractions, steam towels to pull out the extractions, resurfacing, chemical peels, that sort of thing. So a typical person would provide that service on an individual, and currently there's this barrier at the neck. We're removing that barrier. We're also standardizing and trying to make more accountable how we carry out public policy as we provide guarantees to the public that they're getting a service and paying for a service that the individuals are educated and trained to provide. This will align those statutes to our enforcement section being able to carry out that procedure, and in generally changes that terminology so it aligns nationally with more than 45 states and the nation. I want to stress that the Department of Education is the entity that regulates the 38 schools in the state of Oregon. It is called, their division is called the Private Career Vocational Division for Schools. In that division, they set core competency and standards for the practice of cosmetology and many other professions, I might add, but for the purposes of this bill, cosmetology. In that, my discussions with their director, they will be making sure that the core competencies in education and training match, and they're just going to basically review the training to make sure it matches what the licensing law currently provides. And the licensee and the changes within this law. I'm happy to answer any questions. I've provided the committee with support letters from the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, Association of Oregon Cosmetology Colleges, American Association of Cosmetology Schools, National Interstate Council of State Barbers, of Boards of Cosmetology, and the National Coalition of Aesthetics Associations. We also have the support of the American Massage Therapy Association. We do not have a letter. I also provided the committee with a letter from the Oregon Board of Massage Therapy and my response to some of their questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is that handout that I just handed to you with Sue's response on the front. The originating email letter is behind me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any discussion? Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, sir. Can I just ask a question about the origin of that term? Of the application of the use of the term aesthetics to this field. I mean, I'm familiar with aesthetics as a field of philosophy, but I did do a Google search, and when I pulled up aesthetics, I got state after state using it in this context. Is this relatively a new term? And does somebody have to be able to say aestheticist before they can be licensed to be an aestheticist?
You can't pronounce it, you can't be one.
Yeah, you can't be one. Chair Dalton, Representative Greenlee, it's a nationally recognized term and, in fact, internationally recognized term. I'm in favor of calling it skin care specialist, if that serves your interests. It's a nationally recognized term. It may not be grammatically correct, and it may not match
reality. No, I don't have a particular problem, Mr. Chair. I was just kind of curious, and as I say, when I did Google it, it came up
with
state
also,
after state.
There's 45 states, I think, that use that term. So
we learn something every day. That's good.
Yeah.
Did you have an amendment to this bill, too?
Also for this, thank you, Representative Dalto. Also for this bill, and I don't have it with me, it's in the hands of Legislative Council, and they do not have that completed. Our legal counsel stressed that we needed some rule authority to make sure that the exemptions for nursing homes and hospitals is more clearly stated within our law. That's the amendment. It speaks to that exemption, and then we can add specificity within the rules, and that's basically what that amendment does.
And that amendment's not ready.
And it's not ready.
So what is the nature of some of the concerns that you might be aware of on this bill? By all means.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Marquis again, representing the Board of Cosmetology. First, I want to, before I get into the concerns, I would like to say that over the course of time, I've worked with a lot of state agencies and 30 years in this building, and I think that the model that was created with the Health Licensing Office is one of the best models I've seen in state government, because you allow licensed entities to share in expenses of regulatory measures, investigators, and all kinds of other things, and it's a very efficient model in government. And I also want to say that I've enjoyed working with that agency, because I believe Sue Wilson, to my left, is one of the best administrators we have in Oregon government. And when the Board of Cosmetology began to discuss these changes, Sue and I both recognized that when you get into scope of practice issues, no matter who you're talking about, people get nervous that are licensed in an area that is closely related to the area that you're going to change. And there's always going to be some overlap between certain kinds of licensed professions, and we recognize that. But we have to move cautiously when we create changes. And in this case, we removed the C7 vertebrae. Basically, we said, you folks been have been previously called facial technologists and could do makeup and other artistry, skin care above the C7 vertebrae. And that wasn't consistent with what was going on in other states, and so the board wanted to remove that, and that meant that these folks were going to be working on the rest of the body as well, in terms of aesthetics, in terms of skin care. And Sue reached out to everybody that she could find that would be in some way touched by that change. And she had meetings with the associations and with the boards and all of those folks. And that's one of the reasons she is a good administrator, because she does those kinds of things. No one had any objections to the bill, and I'm probably more sensitive to this than Sue is. Sue said the Massage Therapy Association supported our efforts, and I think more technically, they don't have a position to support this bill. They have said they have no objections to the bill. So, I mean, that's kind of a technical difference that perhaps is lost on anybody but a lobbyist, but I wouldn't want to misstate their position in front of a committee. The board of massage has continued to have concerns, and we've had several meetings with them, and I don't want to speak for them, because I think they need to delineate their concerns to you, but I think that we did finally yesterday get their concerns in writing, and we've responded to those, and I believe, Sue, did you share those letters with the committee? And I think that their concerns are outlined in their letter, and Sue's response to that is outlined in her response to them. I believe that the concerns relate to the removal of C7. They relate to, are you folks going to be doing massage, because that's kind of, you know, what we do. And I think Sue has responded to that in a responsible manner. And I think the key here always that we have to remember is the protection of the public health, safety, and welfare, not the regulation of competition. And to that end, what we really need to be looking at is, if somebody is licensed to do something, does the educational requirements match that? And that's what is difficult for Sue, because she doesn't have any authority over the education, so that's Department of Education. So she's going to the Department of Education, she's committed to ask them to review the educational requirements in this area and make sure they do match. And I think that's about as much as she can do.
Okay. Thank you, Jim, for giving us some perspective on that. I think we'll hear from some other folks and see what they have to say.
Thanks.
Colleagues, any discussion, any questions?
No, just a comment is, I hope they don't take that out, because when I get a full European facial, they do your hands and your feet and your head on your head, and it's really very nice.
Jim, in his lobbyist, I do need to put on the record, attempted to bribe me on this bill and promised me a free bikini wax. If
Lord help us.
All right.
More information than I wanted.
Yes.
Really? Michael Deckert? Call Michael Deckert forward.
Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, sir.
If you could just say your name for the record.
Michael Deckert.
Great. Well,
Chair Dalto and members of the Health and Human Services Committee, I'm here to submit written testimony for Ann Williams, who is currently the Director of Education for Ashmead College. And as this is her testimony, I really don't have anything more to say.
Okay, are you just wanting us to read her testimony?
Yes.
Did you have any thoughts about her testimony?
I've had a chance to look it over. I think there are other people more qualified than I am to do that. I am a licensed massage therapist, and I am secretary of the AMTA in Oregon. So.
And so what is your opinion of this bill?
We do have some concerns, but as the AMTA, we've felt that it was, we didn't have a stand on it either which way.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for coming down and presenting that testimony.
Okay.
Next we'll call Jennifer Brady and Jacqueline McCall forward, please. And colleagues, while they're coming forward, I received two emails on this bill. You may have received the same, one from Catherine Law and one from Diana Knott, who is actually here today, so I guess she'll share that with us. So I will, I'll have these photocopied and entered into the public record and make sure you have a copy. So good morning, welcome.
Good morning, welcome.
Yes.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
I'm Jacqueline McCall, and I'm here representing myself. I'm an LMT, and I'm also a member of the Florida Massage Therapist. And I just wanted to address my concerns about the changes to this bill, in this bill. I think that the level of education currently as it stands for facial technologists is insufficient for someone who would be dealing with body wraps. The physiological effects of body wraps are far-reaching in the body. They can raise the core body temperature to dangerous levels. They can dehydrate a person. They can affect the cardiovascular system, overstress it. And as the education level currently stands, they don't have sufficient knowledge to recognize the contraindications for someone receiving a body wrap.
Okay. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No. I'm also submitting written testimony for Stephanie Manriquez, who was unable to be here this morning.
Okay. I appreciate it. We've received your testimony. We'll enter it into the record. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for testifying this morning. Do you know of anyone personally who has suffered as a result of an inappropriate body wrap?
Personally, no.
I do.
Great.
I received permission.
I think you need to give your name first.
I'm sorry. Matt Ferg, Chairman Dalto and members of the committee. I'm here actually representing the Oregon chapter of the United States Medical Massage Therapy Association, and we were not contacted about this until 2 days ago. And we actually, I got permission from the president to speak in their behalf. I'm actually
maybe
the second.
Introduce yourself, though.
I'm Jennifer Brady.
Thank you.
Sorry. I'm a licensed massage therapist and a certified medical massage therapist. I'm the director and owner of Silverton School of Massage, second vice president of the Oregon chapter of USMMTA, a member of the Associated Body Works and Massage Professionals and the American Massage Council. But I'm here representing myself and the U.S. Medical Massage Therapy Association. I was also given permission by the secretary of the USMMTA. She has, I think that might be one of the emails you have, actually, about a client with a blood disorder having serious side effects for 6 days after her body wrap treatment because they weren't qualified to decipher the physiological effects of her condition, nor did they even take a health history. So if they did take a health history, they're not educated enough to make a decision based on their educational requirements right now, in my opinion.
A body wrap? What is a body wrap and who performs it?
Okay. This is, I've submitted written testimony and it covers this exact topic. I want to actually address that topic and the topic of increasing the surface area of cosmetologists up to the elbow and up to the knee and below the seventh vertebra.
It's in my professional opinion that making the changes to ORS 690005, Section 17 and 7D would directly put public health at risk. This is relating to the regulation of practice of plasmatology. I want to address the human body as it should read, or as it reads, I feel should read as face, feet, and hands, as it currently stands in their educational requirements. They've been educated specifically on the hands, face, and feet, unless you count the extremely small and non-existent hours of the other body systems, clinical and practical pathology, rudimentary massage skills, and contraindications, and hours of hands-on experience. I strongly feel that if an individual truly wants to help the public by performing body wraps and massages covering a higher percentage of surface area, higher than approximately 3.5% of the face, this is what they currently cover. And you'll see an addendum on the third page that is actually one of the ways they assess body surface area for burns. Currently, they cover 3.5% of the face, 2.5% of the body areas on the hands, and 3.5% on the feet. I feel that if they want to do more than that, they should get a massage license, because a massage license already covers all of the other physiological effects of the rest of the body.
Jennifer, can I ask you a question? Did you read House Bill 2105?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where in this bill does it say that facial estheticians will be able to do body wraps?
In Section 1-7D.
Section 1, subsection 7, line D.
Facial and body wrapping.
Okay, go ahead.
And then also in Section 113B, it reads, massaging, cleansing, treating, or beautifying the hands, arms below the elbow, feet, and legs below the knee. I didn't read in there that they were changing the below the seventh vertebra, but if that would have been in there, that would have been on my sheet. If you look at that graph on the back of the back page, even going up to the knee and to the elbow, it's more than doubling their surface area. The skin is one of the largest organs in the body, and it's the functions are not just for beautification. They have physiological effects both systemically and reflexively in the body. If you'll see on my sheet, it actually it covers many sources that I've collected on the internet in textbooks. And I have them listed here below. The local, systemic, and reflexive effects of the body and other pertinent information in regards to body wraps. As you will notice, none apply to skin beautification. All detoxification treatments of hydrotherapy, the body wrap is the most beneficial and encompassing. I listed the methods there of real body wraps, and that's dry blanket, sweat body wrap, cold wet sheet, hot moist body wrap, herbal body wrap, and mineral mud body wrap. These body wraps are for treatment of...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I think I see signs all over the place about body wraps. I mean, nails and body wraps, XYZ. I mean, are those body wraps at the moment only being done by licensed massage therapists?
No, but I don't understand why they haven't been. As far as I was under the impression that in the spas that massage therapists were supposed to be the ones performing those body wraps, because when you give a body wrap for weight loss and inch reduction, there's great metabolic changes. That's why they're losing inches.
But our body wraps current... Can I make a
deal? Yes.
are body wraps currently covered by any statute? I mean,
it's covered as far as I'm concerned by the massage license. We're actually required to do a minimum of 30 hours of hydrotherapy, and we learn clinical pathology.
Let me clarify my question. It isn't whether you're authorized to do body wraps. I'm asking the question is, do you know if in the statutes currently there are statutes that restrict the use of body wraps to particular occupations or professions?
I'm not aware of that.
So, I mean, right now, conceivably, I can open up a store that does body wraps?
I guess. Yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. Jennifer, I have a question, too.
Mm-hmm.
What is a medical massage therapist?
It's a therapist who has been certified to work with physicians under prescription. We don't do it independently. We work with other healthcare providers, medical physicians, osteopathic, to actually basically help them rehab the body tissues in order for them to heal at a better rate and more properly and at the normal length.
Jennifer, do you need further education in order to call yourself a medical massage therapist?
Yes.
And what is that?
250 plus 2 years experience.
Thank you.
So.
Okay, I have a question. Do you need some kind of special license to do a body wrap? Can only massage therapists or the people that you're describing do a body wrap, or can anybody do a body wrap? Was that your question?
As far as I know, there's none that exist right now, and I don't understand why. If I would have been involved in it earlier, then I probably would have started that.
Okay, so what difference does it make if a facial esthetician is going to do a body wrap? I mean, you're obviously stating the concerns that you have about their qualifications to do such a thing, but they can do it now anyway.
Yeah.
Because you don't need a special license.
Yeah, but I have an opinion that I think anyone in here would agree on, that's a massage therapist, is when a client leaves and they have negative effects, they just say, yeah, it was wonderful, it's great. And then the next day, they're completely putting it down or they won't return. So we don't get public feedback or opinion on body wraps. And if we did, it may not be.
Well, then why don't you bring a bill forward that specifies who can do a support or opposition to a concept, but I'm saying, I mean, why are we here debating about facial folks who want to do skin care for other parts of the body? Why don't we really have that debate?
There's
about
already
the body
people
wrap
who do skin care for the other parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Dermatologists, that's their job.
But if we didn't have this, if body wrapping was not put into this, you might be happy if you take body wrapping out, then the aestheticist could still do body wrapping.
As it stands right now.
Yeah, as the law stands now. So, I mean, we're not giving them anything that they don't already have the ability to do in this law.
My concern is that we increase the level of education if it becomes a statute. If it's part of their scope of practice.
Okay, my suggestion then is to get together and bring a bill forward, and you can work on just that. Yes, thanks very much for being here this morning. Now
Thank
I will
you.
Call Diana Knott and Susan Braithwaite forward, please. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Susan Braithwaite. I'm the Director of Operations for the Oregon School of Massage, and I'm actually here representing my colleague, Dr. Jill Stannard, who is the Director of Education for the school, who is out ill today, and I have presented written testimony on her behalf.
I am Diana Knott. I actually had not intended on being here today, as I had emailed Representative Delco, as well as sent a hard copy of the letter. I was not sure that it would make it in time, and I felt very passionately about the subject. So essentially, I have submitted copies of the email that I provided to him.
No, we get email all the time, and we try to enter it into the public record because a lot of people feel comfortable sharing testimony that way, and so that's what we'll do. Did you have something to share? Do you want us just to read the email?
Essentially, yes. If you could read the email, it just points out my concerns regarding education, regarding physiological effects on the body. I also addressed ethical concerns that one would have to deal with once you are confined to one area of the body and suddenly you are opened up to the entire body without receiving that additional ethical training as well, that could potentially be a serious concern for the public.
All right. Did you want to share some of your thoughts that you shared in the email while you're here?
I can.
Well, I'm leaving it up to you.
I think it's best put in the email if you wanted to just go ahead, and that way I don't take up more time.
No, it's okay. You're here. We're happy to have you say whatever you'd like to say. If you want that opportunity, but sounds like you don't.
Good.
Okay. Thank you very much for being here. Colleagues, good discussion, questions, comments? Seeing that.
I'd just like to comment one more time. If you were just saying, Chair Dalto, how much we appreciate testimony. I know it's a scary thing to show up here, but it's a very important part of the public process, and we all really do appreciate when you come forward to testify for us to help us do our job.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
If I could just add to that, I guess reading the testimony and hearing the testimony, I share some of the concerns about body wraps, and I guess I've thought that for years as I've seen it advertised, and certainly the materials I think that Jennifer had gotten off the internet. The claims that are made with body wraps, and I guess I'd like to see more studies on the dangers of it, and maybe we should revisit this issue.
Thank you very much for your comments, Representative Tomei. I think it's entirely appropriate if we want to talk about body wraps to come back and talk about body wraps.
Mm-hmm.
So, Representative Anderson.
Great, and that kind of is some of my thinking too. If we're talking skin care, that's one thing, but if we're talking about the whole body and the tissues underneath the skin and some of the important things that could be influenced by a body wrap or by other treatment, massage, other forms of therapy, I think it becomes a much broader issue, and I'd like to see more education, more specialization, and maybe limitation of license in that area.
Thanks. And Representative Greenland, thanks for your comments. Appreciate it. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2105. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2177. And Sandy, do you want to introduce that?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2177 authorizes the State Board of Clinical Social Workers to establish renewal date for certificates and licenses by rule. And we have
all right. Thank you. We have two folks signed up to testify. We'll invite Patrick Allen with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining forward, and John Langenwalter with the Board of Clinical Social Workers. So we invite you to come forward as well.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, behind the bill in your packet, House Bill 2177, is Mr. Langenwalter's testimony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Allen. I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The office, among other things, is charged with helping state agencies figure out ways to make business regulations simpler, faster, cheaper, easier without lowering standards. I've distributed previously to you our package of about 36, 37 bills in the session submitted by agencies that do that in one form or another. They range from really big things to small changes to processes. I think it's safe to say this bill is one of those smaller changes, but by virtue of a number of small changes, we think we can make our regulatory systems better. My understanding is that this bill allows licenses to expire by rule rather than by statute. Statutorily, they all expire at the same time. As someone mentioned to me today, sort of that's analogous to everybody's driver's license expiring on December 31st of every even-numbered year or something like that, and you can imagine the impact that would have. Not quite as large for these licensing bodies, but the intent, as I understand it, would be for them to move to a system that we're recommending as a best practice to licensing agencies, which is to have licenses expire by birth month, which evens that workload out over the course of a year, results in better customer service for licensing agencies. That's all I have, and I'd like to turn it over to John, who can talk in more detail about
a streamlined presentation from the Office of Regulatory
Mr. Chair, I try.
Yeah. All right, good job. John, thanks.
Chair Dalto, members of the committee. I'm John Langenwalter, the administrator for the State Board of Clinical Social Workers, and I'm going to try and streamline my testimony too, because you have the written testimony in front of you and some other documents that support the board's proposal of this bill and the governor's recommendation of the bill. As Patrick indicated, it is an attempt on our part to even out the workload and the cash flow. Specifically, we were asked to undertake this study by the education subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means in 2001, asked us to look at birth month or some other method of doing annual renewals, so it was more workload efficient and fee efficient instead of just all at one chunk. We've completed that study, and thus this bill is before you now. The two things that it helps are the financial and the office efficiencies. Right now, DAS policies indicate that an agency needs to have 3 months carryover balance at the end of the biennium. Our board needs a 5-month carryover balance, because right now we have to get through July, August, September, October, and November before our main money starts coming in. Mm-hmm. So to move to birth months, the money would be coming in year-round. It's not any more money year-round, but it's just a better flow. And then we'd only have to have a 3-month carryover. The office efficiency, like Jim said, you know, if everybody in the state of Oregon renewed their driver's license on December 31st, ODOT would be going crazy. And we do, too, in a much smaller scale. There's about 10 weeks from the middle of November through the end of January where renewals are our primary focus. It's not that we don't do everything else that we need to. We just can't get them handled as quickly as we'd like to and the public needs. So to increase the efficiency of the office, this makes a lot of sense, too. So on behalf of the board, I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to answer any questions, but we do encourage your support of this legislation.
I'd just like to wrap up with one final point, coming back to the customer service element of this for licensees. The example I would use is like anybody else, when your license expires, sometimes you get around to taking care of what you need to take care of way early. Sometimes you don't, and you're up against the deadline, and you've got issues, and it turns out there's documentation you need or things you need to deal with the board on. If everybody's license expires at the same time, the board's got to try to help all of those individual people at the same time, and it creates a real problem for trying to help people who've gotten to that situation by evening that workload out, the ability to deal with those problems and accommodate them and get people licensed and make sure their licensing continues and is improved.
Okay, I appreciate it. Representative Anderson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill makes a lot of sense to me. I think it's exactly where we want to go, kind of cutting things down, making it more efficient, letting the staff kind of spread their time out on the business details so you can get at the real issues of your department. Before I leave the subject, I would like, we had a wonderful conversation yesterday with Mr. Langenwalter, but one concern that I have, and it probably drive Mr. Allen straight into the stratosphere, is that we have a distinction between the LCSWs and the LPCs, some of the licensed professional counselors, and some are able to get compensation reimbursement, some are not. I've had some concerns expressed to me from folks in more rural areas that they could provide services in their area and their scope of practice and assist in dealing with a lot of the counseling problems we have, a lot of the difficulties that the LCSWs handle. And I would like to see us look into a little bit, how do we either license them so that they, the LPCs, so that they can, in fact, be serving this area and be compensated for it along the lines of what the LCSWs do. There is a training difference, but maybe in terms of fees or in terms of the area of codes that they can serve, we can assist people who need help in rural areas to be included in the whole compensation package by the insurance companies.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Greenlake, did you have some comments?
Yes, my comments much less critical than this one, but I thought if you're looking for regulatory streamlining along this line, you might try and work out an ODOT deal as well, so they can get their driver's license renewed the same time.
you, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee. Thank you for that suggestion.
Voter registration while you're at it.
Fishing license.
Fishing license. There you go. Marriage license. You know what I saw? They want to hunt moose now. Four moose showed up in Oregon. They want to hunt them.
Well, they're dangerous and little.
I mean, really, unbelievable. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2177. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2201. Mm-hmm. And we will invite Patrick Allen to return with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining and Julia Cooley with the Board of Counselors and Therapists. And I'm starting to like this regulatory streamlining business. Streamline away.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Patrick Allen, Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Same speech, second bill. This does the same, accomplishes the same objectives as 2177, and recommend your support.
Great. Julia.
Hi, Chair Dalto, members of the committee. My name is Julia Cooley. I'm the administrator for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And I'm here today with regard to House Bill 2201. And I do have to say that there are exactly no changes between or differences between this bill and the previous bill. So again, we're a regulatory agency that by statute is mandated to renew licenses on one date, and this legislation again would allow the board to by rule set the determine how the renewal process payment is conducted, and the board has elected to go with a birth month renewal after surveying the constituency. So there are really no differences between the two bills in terms of brevity. I think I'll just leave it at that and be open to any kinds of questions or anything that I left out.
Thank you, Julia. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Pat, anything more?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Closing the public hearing on 2201 and closing the opening hearing on 2052. Thank you. Do you want to read that, Andy?
Yes, Ms. Madam Vice Chair. House Bill 2053 is changing the name of the current Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service to Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service.
Jeez.
Great.
Getting worse.
Which one?
Great.
Then we have.
Thank you.
Regulatory streamlining agency, do you have anything to say about adding a word?
And we have, I'm going to speak, John Fletcher and Eric Chambers. Did you want to speak too? Great. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. For the record, my name is John Fletcher. I am a policy analyst and legislative coordinator with the Oregon Department of Housing and Community Services. And it's this department that houses the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, so I'm here today on behalf of the department. And we also have one of the commissioners here to speak directly for the commission. The Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service has its own executive director and commissioners appointed by the governor. And this program helps the volunteers throughout the state in a variety of capacities, most familiar as the AmeriCorps program, which you may know about. And this bill that we have before you today does two things. First, it changes the name of the commission. As you see in line 6 of the bill, we're adding the word volunteer to the official name of the commission. The commission is seeking this change to preserve the legal name of the commission, yet provide a simpler name for the public that can be remembered. Right now, the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service is a mouthful. It's hard to to remember, and I find myself referring down to read it correctly. But the public in the future can refer to this commission by the name Oregon Volunteers, and that will help name recognition and simplify things greatly for everyone. And this is a renaming that is being done by many other states as well. These commissions are set up by the federal government in every state, and there's a particular pattern that they have to follow for their federal regulations, so we want to preserve the legal name, yet this name change will help simplify things. So it's a small change, but it's an important change. The bill also makes another change in terms of the membership of the commission, adding two members to what's in statute as the required membership. A few biennium ago, the statutes were changed to align with the federal requirements, and inadvertently two members were left off that list. And so we're adding those back to be in compliance with the federal regulations for the commission. So these are the two changes that we're seeking. I would ask for the committee's support on this bill. Appreciate being with you and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Representative Greenlee.
What would be the consequences in terms of a federal act if this was simply changed to the Oregon Volunteers Commission? Would that take away money? Would that do something that would...
It would not.
Well, why don't we just change it to the Oregon Volunteers Commission then?
Madam Vice Chair, my name is Eric Chambers. I'm a commissioner on the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, also known as OCFAS, unfortunately. Representative Greenlee, I appreciate your question. I think based upon the discussions that I've had with other commissioners, I think that would be something that perhaps we would be interested in. What we are mostly concerned with here, and what we're trying to get at in this piece of legislation, is the ability to brand ourselves so that we can, as we promote volunteerism and civic engagement statewide, we can have some sort of memorable name that people can refer to us by. I think that your suggestion would satisfy that, and certainly I think that would be something that our commission would be receptive to.
If I may comment, I mean, it seems to me adding a word to an already long name is counterproductive, and if you want to be called the Oregon Volunteers Commission, then that's what you ought to be called. It seems very straightforward to me.
Madam Vice Chair, if I may, and members of the committee, we've had a variety of meetings to discuss what name might be best. I guess there's sort of a in-between solution here between where we are today and where we would like to go, so that we don't lose the recognition that's out there today, but yet we can continue to evolve. There are many other names that perhaps would work. This is the name the commission brought forward that they would like to pursue.
Madam Vice Chair, if I could also add a little further comment to that. In our discussions with the commission when we were trying to identify what name to go by, there was certainly the sentiment that we wanted to maintain the recognition that this was the Oregon Commission, through the state of Oregon, as opposed to just some sort of, kind of random commission. And so I think that that's probably why what you see in front of you today is in the state that it's in.
And one more comment, if I may.
Yes, sure.
The name, awkward though it may be, is very similar to names in other states. So there is that national recognition piece too that is maintained by this name.
Perhaps when you come back, or if you come back, perhaps you could submit a list of the names of the commissions in the 50 states, so we could see the variety that's in there. Because you're going to have these signs. You have to change the signs. This really seems to me confuses. I understand what you want to get to, but it seems to me you might want to try and take a more direct path to get there. It would be useful to see the range of names across the states.
Thank you, Representative Greenlee. Eric, did you want to give further testimony?
If I may, I would like to do that. Chairman Dalto, Vice Chair Tomei, members of the committee. Like I mentioned before, my name's Eric Chambers, and I'm a commissioner. I'm starting my second year on the commission. In discussions that we've had through retreats and commission meetings, one of the predominant areas that we've seen difficulty is in terms of how we can best market volunteerism statewide and how we can promote civic engagement and volunteerism. And it's, though we do that currently under the name the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, we recognize that it would be easier for us to try to establish some sort of name recognition or branding in our efforts if we were able to reduce that down to the idea of Oregon volunteers. Our original draft that we referred to Legislative Council had an explanation mark in it that was removed when it came to you. We informally hope to reinsert the explanation mark as we brand ourselves statewide, though not officially. What we're trying to get at here is making our job of promoting volunteerism easier. And we're just, while our current name is cumbersome, and maybe an additional change would also be cumbersome, though hopefully less so, the real idea here is that we're going to try to hyper-define down to this idea of Oregon volunteers, and then formally, of course, will be the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. The other piece of business that this legislation does, though, is brings us in line with federal statute in terms of our membership.
Excuse me, sir.
No,
what you just said is not the case. If you change this law, it will not be be what you just said. The formal name will be the Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Service,
yeah,
and whatever.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It will be Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. And we would brand with the idea of Oregon volunteers. The other piece of legislation, or the other piece of business that this legislation does, is brings our membership numbers in line with federal statute, which enables us to better represent what we're doing to the federal government, which keeps the AmeriCorps and the Learn and Serve funding coming to our state, and we're very happy that that's the case.
President Boone.
And it's just a thought on this response to Mitch. It's almost ironic that we're sitting up here micromanaging what we want volunteers to do. That we're happy that people actually exist to volunteer because they take up such a huge piece of the hard work that usually is paid for work. And I know that by virtue of the large salaries that you guys all get on the commission, I'm rather averse to forcing them to come forward and change their name for our purposes when they've got their own ideas that they've all met time and time again trying to decide the best way to go. So it's kind of a little editorial statement. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
Kirk, is Dan Clem on your board?
Yes.
Dan Clem told me this is a good bill, so.
All right.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd also gotten a phone call from former Representative Ralph Brown, who's also on the board of this bill. And before I let him go, I just want to compliment John on his piano playing, which I happened to catch last evening. So you don't have to give up your day job, but continue your night job.
Okay. All right. Friendly comments. Thank you. Thank you to the both of you for being forward on this bill. And colleagues, I think that's the end of our agenda. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Comments or discussion? Seeing none, we will adjourn for the day.
No meeting.